bailout from the state. Citing multi-billion dollar nuclear bailouts the company has already received for aging, unprofitable reactors in New York and Illinois. So when you hear that Exelon is trying to run the same scam in Pennsylvania, and beyond that you hear...
This nation has already bailed out the nuclear power fleet on several occasions to the tune of a third of $1 trillion.
When you hear things like that, you know that you are in the seat that we all share.
Nuclear hot seat. What are those people thinking? Nuclear hot seat. What have those boys been drinking? Nuclear hot seat. The corium is sinking. Our time to act is shrinking, but our activists are linking. Nuclear hot seat. It's the bomb.
Welcome to Nuclear Hot Seat, the weekly international news magazine keeping you up to date on all things nuclear from a different perspective. My name is Libby Halevi. I'm the producer and host, as well as a survivor of the nuclear accident at Three Mile Island from just 1 mile away. So I know what can happen when those nuclear so-called experts get it wrong. This week, we check in on Exelon's promise, or is it a threat, to shut down the Three Mile Island nuclear reactor near Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and to do so in 2019, unless it gets a state bailout to the tune of millions of dollars, just like it already did in New York and Illinois. We'll hear from Scott Portsline of Three Mile Island Alert, who has a lot to say about what Exelon is trying. Then, on the lighter side of Nuclear Hot Seat, a compilation that was intended for the 6th anniversary show, except we ran out of time that week. So this week you will be subjected to a collection of outtakes, bits, and bobs that never made it into the show. And it's provided strictly for chuckles. Plus, numbnuts of the week for outstanding nuclear boneheadedness, the Duck and Cover Report on the latest problems with our crumbling U.S. nuclear reactor fleet, plus news, attitude, and more honest information than Governor Chris Christie of New Jersey encountered while alone with his family on a public beach that he had closed down to the people of the state of New Jersey because the state lacked the funds. But not for the beached whale to be on the beach. Where was I going with that? Oh, yes, all that information and more will be coming up in just a few moments. Today is Tuesday, July 4, 2017, and here is the week's nuclear news from a different perspective. Starting out this week with parallel stories that are happening at virtually the same time in both the United States and Ukraine. The Chernobyl nuclear power plant, where a huge meltdown occurred in 1986, has had its radiation monitoring equipment knocked out by a mass cyber attack that has been sweeping Ukraine. The official site of the power plant and surrounding exclusion zone has been briefly shut down by the attack, which targeted the country's government, banks, companies, airports, and other infrastructure. Also hit by the attack, but to a lesser and non-nuclear degree, were France and Russia. And here in the U.S. comes word that U.S. authorities are investigating a cyber intrusion affecting multiple nuclear power generation sites this year. This according to E&E News. While there is no evidence yet that the nuclear energy industry's safety systems were compromised, any cybersecurity breach, targeted or not, at closely guarded U.S. nuclear reactors marks an escalation of hackers' probes into U.S. critical infrastructure. Further details of this breach of security are not available because the information may be classified. And just to throw in another example of hackers messing with nuclear, in another nuclear breach recently, a South Korean state-owned utility reported losing potentially sensitive data to hackers in 2014 and 2015. Well, I guess it isn't that recent if it took them 2 years to let us know about it. Fortunately, the attackers did not get into operational systems. And in a second shared story, a new wildfire has started west of the Hanford Reservation in southeast Washington state and sent smoke drifting towards Spokane as of this past Monday. The fire also forced evacuation of some workers at the Hanford nuclear site. The danger from a wildfire near a nuclear facility is that if there's any radioactive material that has come out of the site and been deposited on the soil or in the water or taken up into any of the material that is burning, it can be released in smoke and then carried for great distances. We saw this with a Los Alamos fire that took place in New Mexico back in 2011. No word as to radiation readings either in Richland next to Hanford or in Spokane. That parallels another situation in Ukraine, where firefighters are battling to contain a forest fire inside the irradiated exclusion zone around the Chernobyl nuclear facility. On Thursday, June 29, Ukraine's Ministry of Environment detected radiation levels 2.5 times above average after the wildfire approached the nuclear waste storage facility in the exclusion zone. This is not the first wildfire to break out near the site of the 1986 reactor explosion and fire. In 2015 alone, fires engulfed close to 1,000 acres of forests within the radioactive exclusion zone. You don't want to be breathing that smoke. More news from Hanford, and that's that a second tunnel storing highly radioactive waste is at serious risk of a cave-in. The Department of Energy made this announcement last Friday morning following a review of the sturdiness of the two tunnels at the former Plutonium Uranium Extraction Facility, or PUREX, site. The smaller of the two waste storage tunnels was discovered to be partially collapsed, a 20-by-20-foot hole, on May 9, leading to the declaration of a site-wide emergency at the nuclear reservation. Over 3,000 workers took cover indoors for hours and were told not to eat or drink anything for fear of radioactive contamination. Officials have since claimed that there was no detected release of radiation, but the fact of the collapse was initially discovered by workers doing a routine check of radiation before doing maintenance work and discovering what was referred to as a shine of radiation from the tunnel site. No word yet as to whether this claimed shine is actually other than a radioactive incident or a semantic manipulation. The Department of Energy review showed that neither of the two tunnels at the PUREX site meet current codes for structural integrity, and the second, longer tunnel also may not be able to bear the weight of the 8 feet of soil covering it. DOE warned that the tunnel has, quote, a high potential for localized collapse, and a second quote, it is structurally deficient by almost every measure, and may also pose a risk to human health and the environment. Note that in the current administration's budget proposal for 2018, Hanford will receive $120 million less than it currently gets to maintain the site. And speaking of the proposed budget, U.S. Senator Dianne Feinstein on Wednesday, June 28, said the president's budget request for the next fiscal year could lead to a 33% workforce reduction at Oak Ridge National Laboratory, losing 1,600 of the lab's roughly 4,800 employees. Oak Ridge was established in 1942 as part of the Manhattan Project to build the first atom bombs, and that's where plutonium was first generated from enriched uranium. Despite the cutbacks in personnel, should this budget be passed by the Congress, Donald Trump has a plan to help the aging fleet of U.S. nuclear reactors, which are estimated to be losing nearly $3 billion a year. What does he want to do? Study the issue. At the culmination of the White House Energy Week, Trump was set to announce a comprehensive review of U.S. nuclear regulations, stopping short, for now, of the big federal interventions advocates say are needed to revitalize the industry, which is struggling to compete against cheap natural gas and how to dispose of its radioactive waste. Mike McKenna, a Republican energy strategist with close ties to the administration, said, "For anyone who knows nuclear, there's no doubt about what needs to be done." To which Nuclear Hot Seat says, "Yes, shut them down and then clean up your mess. Don't come to us for any more money until you do." And with that in mind, it's time for
Nuclear Hot Seat, Nuclear Hot Seat, Nuclear Hot Seat, none that's out of week.
U.S. Energy Secretary Rick Perry said on Tuesday, June 27, that one of his agency's goals is to push nuclear energy. He said, "One of the things we want to do at the Department of Energy is to make nuclear energy cool again." Listen up, you clueless frat boy. Nukes were never cool. Oh, wait a minute. They were for you and your friends? Here's a further quote. Perry said, "You remember when we were kids? Well, sorry, you are nowhere near my age." Chortle, chortle, chortle. "But when I was younger in the 60s, and a lot of kids wanted to go into the nuclear energy field." But that isn't the case now, he said, quote, "because this industry has been strangled all too often by government regulations." "What, Rick Perry? Like safety regulations? Because you're dealing with the most dangerous material on the planet, plutonium?" Perry went on to say that he wants the U.S. to begin again to, quote, "bring us to that place where nuclear energy is part of a portfolio and be able to sell it in great truthfulness and honesty," gag me with a spoon, "about what it can add to America from an environmental standpoint." What environmental standpoint? Like the addition of life-destroying radionuclides with a half-life of forever into our water, into our air, into our soil, into the uptake of our plants that we eat and the animals that eat the plants that have the radiation in them? But, of course, none of that will work into the nuclear Schilling Perry's storyline of truthfulness and honesty. Because radiation works invisibly and in slow motion. No one in the future will hold you accountable for their cancers, for their heart disease, for any of the other problems that can come from exposure to radionuclides. Your feet will not be held to the fire. In fact, your feet will be allowed to be cool, like nuclear most definitely is not. And that's why you, Rick Perry, alas and alack for all of us, Energy Secretary of the United States, are this week's
Nuclear Hot Seat, none that's out of week.
Now for some nuclear mistakes, oops, malfeasance, and other problems. The Los Alamos National Laboratory in New Mexico is facing a new federal investigation for shipping nuclear materials out of state by aircraft in violation of federal law. An error which the National Nuclear Security Administration called absolutely unacceptable. The lab mislabeled shipments of special nuclear materials, a term used for radioactive weapons-grade plutonium and uranium, that were headed last week to the Savannah River National Laboratory in South Carolina and Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory in California. This incident comes as the lab has faced a fresh wave of scrutiny from federal officials over whether it is capable of handling increasing quantities of plutonium as the nation ramps up its production of plutonium pits, the grapefruit-sized cores that trigger nuclear bombs. This to take place over the next 15 years at Los Alamos, or so they're projecting, to build as many as 80 pits per year. That is the pits. Also at Los Alamos, it has been revealed that in April and May of 2014, an elite group of 97 nuclear researchers from as far away as the United Kingdom were exposed to radiation during an experiment, not knowing that Los Alamos technicians had shut off the radiation alarms. As a result, 31 of these scientists have been discovered to have inhaled uranium. We will have a link up to a long story by ProPublica on our website, nuclearhotseat.com, under this episode, number 315. But wait, there's more! In San Francisco, The cleanup of radioactive contamination at the Hunters Point shipyard was marred by widespread fraud, faked soil samples, and a high-pressure culture where speed was valued over accuracy and safety. This, according to four former site workers who have turned whistleblower, and include a radiation safety officer who reported directly to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. The nonprofit Green Action for Health and Environmental Justice has filed a petition with the NRC to revoke the license of contractor Tetra Tech, which oversaw the cleanup of the Superfund site. Questions over the accuracy of the soil test, remember that phrase, soil tests, emerged in October 2012 when the Navy discovered that some results were inconsistent with results from previous samples from the same areas. In at least 386 cases, the dirt from a radioactive site which was supposed to be tested turned out to have been collected from areas already given a clean bill for radioactive contamination. And who did this testing? Tetra Tech. Why is that important? Because in North St. Louis, in the case of the Westlake Landfill's radioactive contamination of the area, dust and other materials from the adjacent Spanish Village subdivision have been tested, and while an independent testing lab has found high levels of radiation with the signature of the Westlake debris, Tetra Tech was hired by Republic Services, and they tested two houses and said, nope, don't see any radiation here. They have a history of lying. We'll keep following these cases. At the now-closed Vermont Yankee nuclear power plant, a senior radiation protection technician deliberately falsified safety records and failed to check workers for radiation exposure for 8 months last year, this according to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. The NRC labeled this deception deliberate and willful. As for other nuclear reactors, duck and cover, that's this report. Operating reactors with problems last week included our old friend Indian Point in New York, which had a problem that was reportable as a loss of safety function, and two additional problems from Summer in South Carolina and Fermi in Michigan. In South Korea, the country's nuclear shares took a hit from the new government's anti-nuclear policy a day after President Moon Jae-in decided to suspend construction of two partially built nuclear reactors. Shares of KEPCO, the state-run utility at the forefront of the country's efforts to export nuclear reactors, fell 1.8%. And since the company was the only potential acquirer of the bankrupt U.S. nuclear power plant builder Westinghouse, because of security reasons, the political shift on nuclear energy will probably discourage the state-run company from pursuing any attempt to buy Westinghouse. In Germany, four activists from an anti-nuclear energy group managed to temporarily prevent a boat carrying nuclear waste from carrying its cargo down the river Neckar in southern Germany. The activists from the group Robin Wood rappelled from a bridge over the river last Wednesday, holding a banner which read, "Prevent rather than postpone." Their target was the first ever shipment of nuclear waste to be transported along a German river. The boat was forced to come to a stop and was delayed for several hours. In Canada, the world's oldest operating nuclear reactor in Chalk River is set to be closed in 2018 after a 60-year run on a 40-year design. Reasons include serious age-related breakdowns, safety and security concerns, and political controversy. As all reactors do, it leaves behind a legacy of waste, 60 years' worth of highly radioactive nuclear waste. Government-owned, private-sector-operated Canadian Nuclear Laboratories is proposing to build a $325 million facility to dispose of a large quantity of low- and intermediate-level waste generated from the demolition of aging buildings and other radioactively contaminated material that has been generated at Chalk River over the last 65 years. But several former scientists who work there have come forward to say that CNL, Canadian Nuclear Laboratories, their proposal is seriously flawed and represents a threat to human health and the environment. We will have much more on the story of what's happening in Canada and with Chalk River on next week's Nuclear Hot Seat, where we will feature an extended interview with Dr. Gordon Edwards of Canadian Coalition for Nuclear Responsibility. And building on the feature we did 2 weeks ago on the Marshall Islands, that was in Nuclear Hot Seat number 313 from June 20th, 2017, there is an extended blog post entitled Witnesses of the Bomb, Seven Testimonies from the Era of Nuclear Testing in French Polynesia. It's quite eye-opening, too long to go into here, and we will link up on the website, nuclearhotseat.com, under this episode, number 315. Over to Japan, where I will start with this correction. On last week's show, I fell for an echo chamber story that Japan had announced plans to dump 920,000 tons of nuclear waste from the Fukushima nuclear facility into the Pacific Ocean. The truth is that while they have been considering such a plan for many years, and they have been debating it, the decision has not yet been made. They'll probably try to do it and get away with it, but not at this time, and I apologize for the confusion. Three former executives of Tokyo Electric Power Company, TEPCO, have pleaded not guilty to charges stemming from the March 11, 2011 triple meltdown at the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant. The men are accused of professional negligence, resulting in the deaths of 44 people, including hospital patients forced to stay at evacuation shelters for a long period. And that's just taking into account the immediate acknowledged deaths within Japan. And serious delays have been seen in breast cancer diagnosis among women living in the northern coastal region of Fukushima. The number of breast cancer patients, including young women, has been rising, and the issue has attracted renewed attention after popular TV personality Mao Kobayashi recently died of breast cancer at the age of 34. And we will have three additional links up on the website. The first is on the very great difference in effects on the environment between nuclear bombs and nuclear meltdowns. And it turns out that meltdowns at reactors are far more damaging than even the fireball and radiation from a nuclear bomb. In the event of a nuclear attack, here's how the government is going to protect itself and not be concerned about you. And another on how the survival of the human race may depend on a seed vault buried in Norway's permafrost, where nuclear waste is about to be buried underneath it. We'll have our featured interview in just a moment. But first, I know that you care about getting honest, verifiable nuclear news. Otherwise, you wouldn't be listening to this show. That's what we set out to provide at Nuclear Hot Seat. Verifiable information, sourced and checked every week. Plus, interviews with people who are genuine experts on various aspects of the nuclear industry, and people whom the nuclear industry would rather you not know or hear from. That's what we provide here. But it takes money to do this show. We do incur costs, and that's where we need your help. In order to continue to bring you the most accurate information possible, please help us out with a donation of any size. Just go to nuclearhotseat.com and click on the big red donate button. I'm deeply grateful for whatever you can do to help us meet our expenses and to keep Nuclear Hot Seat alive and kicking serious nuclear posterior. Now for the interview. Scott Portsline is the security consultant to Three Mile Island Alert and a longtime one-man tech support team for Nuclear Hot Seat. In this interview, he fills us in on the background of the move by Exelon to try to gain Pennsylvania state funds to shore up their money-losing nuclear reactor at Three Mile Island. Scott provides the info with his well-known precision, then fills us in on how Three Mile Island Alert Chair Eric Epstein is doing, while providing an audio glimpse of why the nuclear industry fears his expertise and refuses to debate Eric in the media. Scott, on May 29, Exelon Corporation, the owner-operators of Three Mile Island, stated that they were going to close the nuclear facility in 2019 unless they could secure a financial rescue, that's what they're calling it, from the state of Pennsylvania.
it sounds like they're a bratty little kid saying, give me money or we're going to take our ball and our bat and go home, and then you're going to be really sorry. From your perspective, how solid is this threat or promise to close Three Mile Island?
You're right. That announcement is designed to make the Pennsylvania General Assembly pass legislation to rescue nuclear power here in Pennsylvania. In my opinion, it's a shot across the bow, and it's being played out in the media to try to persuade Pennsylvanians that it's a good idea to do another bailout of the nuclear plants. Well, what I found out is that Pennsylvania had formed a special nuclear caucus earlier this year. So this is actually a scripted shot across the bow designed to stir up a fuss in the media. Meanwhile, the Pennsylvania Nuclear Caucus knew what was coming. That's why it was formed, to seek artificial ways to make nuclear power generation competitive on the open market, which it's not. Exelon, the owners of Three Mile Island, has used the same tactic in the last 2 years to pressure the states of Illinois and New York to artificially restructure the playing field. And the result was tens of billions of dollars in bailouts for nuclear plants. Well, this nation has already bailed out the nuclear power fleet on several occasions to the tune of a third of $1 trillion. Nuclear power is not economically feasible, and Wall Street knew that 20 years ago. So while many utilities walked away from nuclear power, Exelon bet the house that they could profit from nuclear power. They were betting against the trend. Exelon took a very bad risk, and they should have to face the consequences. It was like they were betting that the mythical Washington Generals would beat the Harlem Globetrotters. It just wasn't going to happen. Pennsylvania has a surplus of electricity, and our taxpayers and ratepayers should not be forced to salvage Exelon's doomed decision.
You know, I was raised to believe that in capitalism, if a company is not doing well, is failing, is not pulling its own weight, it needs to close. Why does nuclear think that it is immune or must be made immune to the pressures of the marketplace?
If you look back to the early 2000s, you can find documents of meetings from the American Nuclear Society where they realized that nuclear power was not competitive. The industry realized they couldn't cut costs any further. They had been paring back safety parameters over the years, telling the NRC that certain regulations were unnecessary. So they believed that there needed to be a new paradigm to make nuclear power generation profitable. And they sought to do that through the manipulation of politicians, who in turn could manipulate artificial pricing at the expense of ratepayers and taxpayers. And that, I believe, is what Exelon banked on. And so far, they're having some success. Not in all the states, but they certainly have in Illinois and New York, two of the states with the most nuclear plants.
One of the factors being cited by Exelon for the possible closure is Three Mile Island's recent failure in an auction to sell their power to the regional grid. Now, I have to admit that this is an aspect of the workings of the power industry that confuses me, and I'm certain that many of the listeners are confused as well. Explain to us what it is they're talking about and the significance of this failure to sell the electricity to the grid.
After the deregulation of the electrical utilities, the distributors have to purchase power in advance from the electrical generators. If they're caught short with how much they decided to purchase at the auction, then they have to pay exorbitant rates during peak loads, and that causes a problem for the profit margin. So every year when this auction comes up, nuclear plants, especially like Three Mile Island, have a hard time selling their electricity and therefore getting a guaranteed rate. Well, without that guarantee, they can still sell electricity at the time it's needed, but they won't be getting the price that they'd like to have. It's at the level of the auction where utilities compete.
So what have you seen Exelon doing politically or in a public relations way to try and turn the finances of Three Mile Island around and in their favor so that they can get a massive financial bailout from the state?
Well, of course, the entire industry is playing the global warming card by falsely claiming that nuclear power saves the world from carbon gas releases. When you examine the amount of carbon releases during the construction and decommissioning of a reactor site, the digging and excavation of multiple waste sites, and the energy-expensive mining and processing of uranium, one realizes that the PR is a lie. On top of that, nuclear plants release thousands of tons of chemicals into Pennsylvania waterways. Sometimes they exceed their limits and are fined. In Pennsylvania, we have a constitutional right to clear water. The good news is, the United States is already ahead of schedule for the Department of Energy's the year 2030 energy plan, which will have 20% of our electricity supplied by wind. With solar and wind power, there's no perpetual waste bill, no security force, no government-subsidized catastrophic insurance, and no need for evacuation plans for these renewables. Best of all, economically, it relieves us of the financial entanglement of nuclear plants.
What kind of response has Three Mile Island Alert been providing to this new onslaught of PR propaganda and disinformation by the nuclear industry in the form of Exelon?
Three Mile Island Alert did respond in the local media via the television stations and radio stations, even in a debate-type forum. And we are urging that the Pennsylvania legislators pave the way for upstart wind and solar power equipment manufacturers. You know, there's a 250,000 jobs being generated by the alternative energies field. And we think Pennsylvania could, in effect, create 20 times more jobs than are lost to nuclear plant closures. Another appeal we made to the public was that Three Mile Island Unit 2, the one that had the meltdown, provided electricity for less than 90 days, yet a federal court ordered ratepayers to continue to pay for the destroyed power plant as if it were benefiting the area. Then in the 90s, the federal government saw to it that nuclear plants could recover what's called stranded cost. In other words, nuclear plants, 20 years after they've started generating electricity, still had not paid for the cost of building the plant. And Pennsylvania nuclear plants received about $10 billion from that bailout. Nuclear plants had a handout decades ago when the federal government realized that there was no way that a utility could afford to pay insurance premiums that would truly reflect the damages possible from a reactor accident. More recently, the federal government's having to pay utilities to store the nuclear waste at their facilities, which is yet another handout coming from the taxpayers. TMI Alert believes that Pennsylvanians have already endured too many financial hardships from nuclear power, and we should not be forced to have a fourth bailout and then a fifth bailout someday when the nuclear waste bill comes due year after year after millennium after millennium.
I'm certain that in all of this, Eric Epstein, the esteemed chair and longtime head of Three Mile Island Alert, has had quite a bit to say about what Exelon is attempting in Pennsylvania.
Yes, he has. In fact, Eric was recently released from a lengthy stay in the hospital, so he's rehabbed from that, and we're glad to have him back in the ranks. And hopefully he'll be able to help us fight this bailout of nuclear power plants in Pennsylvania. In March of this year, we held a roast and a tribute to Eric Epstein. That was part of our 40th anniversary celebration. Three Mile Island Alert was actually formed 2 years before the meltdown at TMI in 1979. And the group accurately predicted there was going to be an accident and that Unit 2 was dangerously faulty. Now, how did we know? Because the workers themselves were telling us how poorly constructed things were, the inconsistencies and the rush jobs that were happening to get it online in time for that tax break. So I created a 6-minute video of Eric's debating prowess, which is quite formidable if you've ever seen him in action. In fact, I've had several nuclear engineers say they do not want to be across the table from Eric during a news interview or a debate. On many occasions, pro-nuclear advocates in Pennsylvania and utility officials have actually refused to be on the program with Eric. Not because he is some sort of detriment to the show or the topic, but because Eric is so good at presenting facts and details in an orderly way that these poor fellows reveal that they don't know the whole story and wind up looking foolish. So what you're about to hear is my favorite interview with Eric. This occurred about 13 years ago, but it's classic Eric Epstein. Across the table from him is Ted Quinn, at that time the president of the American Nuclear Society. And there are also three hosts involved in the discussion. The video starts out with a few shots from the March 28, 1979 meltdown at Three Mile Island. Then you'll hear the voice of the fabulous Harrison Brooks, our narrator for our upcoming videos that we'll be putting online. These videos will explain detailed facts that we think should never be forgotten. These are the historical facts of just exactly what occurred and led up to the Three Mile Island meltdown. As you listen to portions of the interview, you'll hear Ted Quinn getting awfully nervous as he's being thrown for a loss by Eric Epstein. He starts to stammer and stutter and forget what he's saying. So I added some heartbeat sound effects as his heart must have been pounding. And there's some other fun things, too.
This is what happens when Eric faces off with nuclear prevaricators.
What are some of the lasting effects from that accident?
Well, you got to remember that this community is very conservative, very Republican, very Bible Belt, was overwhelmingly pro-nuclear prior to TMI. After TMI, the community felt betrayed by both the industry and the government. We now have a community that's anti-Three Mile Island and still feels the effects. Because let's put things into perspective. 25 years later, TMI is not cleaned up.
Because of the earthquake protection of these facilities, they're very hardened to start out with, and with Department of Homeland Security and with other federal agencies looking at the careful process. But they are very safe right now for the aspects of terrorism as we look at it in the United States.
Go ahead, Eric, quickly.
But it's not true here. First of all, we had to sue the owners of TMI to have a reinforced containment structure in the 70s because the plant is located next to an airport. In 1993, an escaped mental patient drove his car through the front gate. They couldn't find him for 4 hours.
That was 20 years ago.
All right. A month after 9/11 at TMI, the plant was shut because of a terrorist threat. And if you look at the FOIA report, the operators didn't know what to do or how to handle the threat. In addition to that, right. We had a guy, a fisherman who was drinking beer last year, wind up on the island and nobody could find him. Security has not improved.
I believe that nuclear energy in the 25 years since Three Mile Island has increased the value of the plants, including Three Mile Island, by over a factor of 10. And that energy source, along with renewables, solar, wind, clean coal, needs to be the basis for the future energy supply so that outages such as the August 14th outage last year that occurred on the East Coast don't continue to occur in the future.
Can I make a brief point?
Go ahead.
Because I just want to share something with you. TMI is worth $600 million on Wall Street. You know, our county valued it at $69 million. Ted just said that it's worth 10 times more. TMI's owner says their plant is worth $5 million. We're in court right now forcing TMI to pay their taxes.
Well, it's very safe, and I'd just like to make sure that the people recognize that for 25 years, the other unit at Three Mile Island has provided stable, reliable electricity for the city the size of Philadelphia for over 25 years and is performing reliable, and no one was hurt at Three Mile Island.
Right.
In fact, there was no cancer, as shown by the National Cancer Institute.
No, that's not true.
Eric, go ahead.
Now, I mean, that's a fantasy. This man is propagating a myth. For example, TMI-1 was shut down for 6.5 years. It's been operating for 19 years, not 25 years. This man needs to get his facts straight. Number two, every credible health study, beginning with the Columbia Health Study, the University of North Carolina study, and the Pittsburgh study, have found increased cancer. Now, what we have here, the issue is not if TMI caused cancer, but how much cancer. And we have found increased cancer. We have found cancer clusters in the direction where the fallout was. And, you know, I get irritated when people living in another area code tell me how safe it is to have a nuclear power plant in my backyard.
Well, I think it's important to recognize that the National Cancer Institute did provide the report in 1990 that recognized no increase in cancer. And in 1995, the report in...
But wait, there's more.
...in Harrisburg by the courts announced that
It's unconscionable that we are generating 30 metric tons of lethal waste a year that has nowhere to go. I mean, would you buy a house where the toilet fed into the front yard and the contractor said, I'll come back in 30 years?
The court case on increasing cancer in the local area was not recognized, was thrown out. And it's important for the people to recognize that that's not true for the local citizens in the area.
Well, I don't know who this guy is, but, I mean, I represent the local citizens. This guy has to get his facts straight. First of all, 10 years after an accident, 1990, is not enough time to investigate radiogenic cancers.
I disagree with Oh, I wanted to say I disagree with Eric on the first case, which is the issue of demonstrated effects. I don't agree with the cancer results, and I think they've proven themselves both in court and in scientific evidence.
I don't know who this guy is. I don't know him from a used can of spray paint. But wait a minute. I live here. I work here. And tomorrow, after the 25th anniversary, we'll still be here.
And that's what it sounds like when a genuine nuclear expert takes down an industry propagandist. Well done, Eric Epstein, the chair of Three Mile Island Alert, in full power taking on the nuclear industry. Boy, that was a good one. Glad to know you're on the mend. And my thanks to Scott Portzline for his information and also for sharing these clips. Okay, on to something a little bit lighter. Every week on Nuclear Hot Seat, I provide at least one interview and often more than one. Each of these is recorded in advance and then edited. So when I say edited, what are you missing out on? That's what you're about to hear. I prepared this compilation for the 6th anniversary show, Nuclear Hot Seat 312, which posted on June 13, 2017. But I ran out of time on that show. So here's a glimpse of what you usually don't get to glimpse behind the scenes. First, I edit out the to-ing and fro-ing it takes for us to settle in with each other and to check our sound levels. I also take out technical glitches and any time that Skype is being really obnoxiously Skype-ish. If there's an overly long pause between questions and answers, say somebody has to look something up or they're just taking a while to put their thoughts together, I edit out that extraneous stuff because there's no need for you to do a stage wait during it. Then we come to the little extraneous noises and verbal tics that people have that don't really add anything substantive to the interview and quite frankly can get in the way. For example, Remember that these are all extremely articulate, intelligent, knowledgeable people who just occasionally on mic have an off moment. I try to guide guests into giving the best possible interview, the best quality information that they have in the shortest period of time, sometimes with mixed results.
Let me set you up for that.
Let me blow my nose real quick.
Now, were you one of the people who was actually King? Okay, that was just a big exhale that was in the air, so let's try this again.
So what happened was...
Alice, let me just interject there. Be careful. You're emphatic, but you're hitting your desk, and that's creating noise. So just if you could refrain from that. You were getting so emphatic there. I loved it, but a little less of that, okay? Okay, so...
There is this really interesting trade-off between I'll start over again. I shouldn't be drinking Diet Coke, you know? too much gas.
The complicate testing... And I just had a brain fart. We're going to have to do over. Hang on. Okay. Go ahead. Okay.
My jaw just dropped.
Yes.
Okay. Where do we go from that one?
Site as the sole repository for U.S. high-level nuclear waste from commercial reactors.
I'm so sorry. I just had something fall in my kitchen.
More recently, our efforts have been looking at water as a carrier of power, as a, maybe you don't know.
I am always here to be educated, Ian. That's why I ask you a question and then I stand back.
Yeah.
The ID you type in is DOE underscore
FRDOC_0001-3020.
That's why I much prefer to link URLs on the website. Of course, I reserve the most stringent editing for myself. What, you think I'm this good off the top? Trust me, I have my moments. Give a listen to some of my highlights from 2017.
Now, they're saying that they plan to move this high-level radio waste, this high-level radioactive waste.
534 Boraflex Pam. Blah, blah, blah. All rights rules. Blah, blah, blah.
This has been Nuclear Hot Seat for Tuesday, October 22nd, 2013. Is that today's date?
And as... blah, and the projection from Sunday... Blah, 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 blah. All rights rules. Blah, blah, blah. Know that I'm...
What progress, if any, has... No, let me try that again.
Albuquerque, June... Blah, blah, blah. And as...
This has been Nuclear Hot Seat for Wednesday, October 20... Tuesday.
Helmholtz Radio Analysis... Helmholtz Radio Analysis...
Where it continues to be brought down to Earth and into our lives by the jets... By... When the Fukushima Daiichi...
The United Nations Non-Proliferati... This week, we continue our education on what's wrong with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission's consideration of the radiation-denying Hormesis, as of last Friday, August, what the fuck was it? National co-optation by nuclear mor- You've sold your soul and your future in order to be able to keep going back to your nuclear source. We'll have epidemiologic that ultrasonic testing has shown there are 1,000 holes or cavities of half a centimeter in diameter. We will have our featured interviews in just a moment. But first, the nuclear website Hot Seat.
NuclearHotSeat.com under this episode number 242. I think. I start losing track after a while.
Today is Thursday. No, it's not.
Oh, no.
I hate this story. I hate this story. And then, of course, there are our four-legged furry friends always wanting to get their comments onto the show and make their voices heard.
They see the reality. They see these folks who are sick. They see the survivors of the patients that didn't make it to go to these meetings.
Or, Munchkin?
There's a dog barking. Let me close the door. It's not even my dog. Hey. Hey! Knock it off! Knock it off! Let me throw some kibble out. I throw it over the fence. It eats it. And it shuts up.
What goes on behind the scenes?
Walking through x-ray machines at airports.
Boy, I'm very sorry. Stop it, bro. He's just an instigator. He's a crabby old man.
Not unlike the way I feel some days.
Or me. So the problem is sort of the Three Mile Island problem. I believe you have some familiarity with Three Mile Island.
Take it back to Three Mile Island. You were being contradicted in the background. Somebody couldn't wait to get their comments in.
Hang on one second.
Sure.
Let's stop.
Activist shout-outs. And that's Munchkin. Instant karma. And NGG Press reports, shut up, Munchkin. All of this coming up in just a few moments. Except I have to re-record this because my dog just drank some water. Oh, come on, Munchie, do you have to eat your kibble now?
I want to find out what you think would make the show better, more relevant, more consistent. Munchkin, no! The opinion of dogs has not been requested. How would a person proceed if they wanted to participate with you? Oh, by the way, there are noises going on in the bathroom.
You know what? I'm so sorry. I was going to tell you. My dog just got into my recycling. Hold on a minute.
And sometimes when a guest hits me with a particularly stunning piece of information, my response is, I can't think of a thing to add. I still can't. So that's the way we'll end this segment for this year. Activist shout out. Sending love and light to two members of our extended nuclear hot seat family, both of whom are dealing with very serious issues. Erica Gray, who provides the Nuclear Regulatory Weekly Reports on Nuclear Reactor Malfunctions, has suffered a tragic death within her family. Whatever you can do to send support her way, be it in the form of meditation or prayer, Facebook messages, or notes care of the Sierra Club of Virginia, please do so. And love and light to Jewel E. Stan, the everything of everythings for UCY.TV. This is the online network that syndicates Nuclear Hot Seat. It was the first that did. And every May, she gives us our audit of countries with listeners who have downloaded the show. Jules has been one of the earliest and continues to be a steadfast supporter of Nuclear Hot Seat, as well as Lonnie Clark's Age of Fusion. Jules has been having some serious health problems lately. So again, a show of love, light, positive energy, virtual hugs, and prayers if you've got them. Send them her way for a rapid and complete recovery. Here's today's final thought. Today, July 4, marks the day when we here in the US of A celebrate the official founding of our country, which was also the legalization of taking all this beautiful land we now have away from native tribes who had been here for thousands of years. Our celebration of this founding of what we call liberty seems to have devolved into an excuse for backyard barbecues, beer, and the explosion of fireworks, which are meant to be benign but will terrorize animals and blow off a few hands before it's done, no matter how careful we try to be. In that we are in the United States, we are fortunate, because in so many countries, loud explosions nearby signify danger, destruction, injury, and death, rather than pretty colored patterns in the sky and trembling, terrified animals on the lap. It seems our national identity is tied up with destruction. We are what we wipe out. I've often wondered how much of this attitude is seeded by the subliminal programming contained within our national anthem. Think of the words of the bridge. And the rocket's red glare, the bombs bursting in air, gave proof through the night that our flag was still there. In other words, if we're not bursting bombs, there's no proof that we exist. That's an ugly twist to the psychology of a nation. Who would we be without our endless wars, without our bombs, and especially the biggest, baddest bomb of all, the nuclear ones? I remember back in the 1960s, there was a brief hippie moment when we discussed substituting Woody Guthrie's This Land Is Your Land for the Star Spangled Banner. This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you and me. It's still pretty white colonialist, but at least nothing in it is exploding, and it does take nature into the picture, at least somewhat of a step up. Of course, as a chosen and instituted national anthem, it's a nice thought, but that thought ain't going anywhere. Still, I wonder, what would it take to transform that into a planetary song? This earth was made for you and me. What would the new lyrics be? From Saharan deserts to the polar ice caps, at least as long as we have polar ice caps, from the seven oceans to the highest mountain tops, this earth was made for you and me. You get the idea. What if this became the theme song of the United Nations?
What if it was translated into all the languages of the planet and sung simultaneously around the world to be live-streamed and then warehoused on YouTube? What if the countries of the world started laying down one shared song of peace and responsibility for life and appreciation for what we have and a desire to sustain it, rather than a series of separate, separating nationalistic claims? Would life be better? Would we still have the bomb? Would there still be war? Could a song change all that? One never knows the ultimate impact of any action, no matter how large or small. In physics, a quantum leap is not what most people think, which is an enormous change. A quantum leap in physics is the smallest possible change that can extrapolate out to an enormous change. That's a big difference between the two. It's like when you see a baby learning how to walk. When they take their first big step, they fall over. They can't maintain it. Only when they learn to take a small step that succeeds, and then another one after that, and after that, do they master the skill of walking and, yes, build up to taking really big steps. We need all the quantum shifts that we can imagine and put out there, the small steps, the small things that just might grow into something more larger and meaningful. Now, this is probably just a naive little thought that could turn into something or not. I'll probably never find out. Meanwhile, excuse me while I give my dog another dose of rescue remedy and hold her on my lap. The noise of those fireworks explosions do terrify her, and that's without an accompanying life-destroying blast and eternal contamination by nuclear radiation. Hell of a thing to be celebrating. This has been Nuclear Hot Seat for Tuesday, July 4, 2017. Material for this week's program has been researched and compiled from RT.com, Nuclear-News.net, Tri-CitiesHerald.com, Spokesman.com, Bloomberg.com, OakRidgeToday.com, WashingtonExaminer.com, SFGate.com, SantaFeNewMexican.com, ScientificAmerican.com, WTOP.com, NBCNews.com, LATimes.com, TASS.com, journals.plos.org, thelocal.de, theglobeandmail.com, ottawacitizen.com, litbyimagination.wordpress.jp, snopes.com, npr.org, businessfacilities.com, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, and a shout-out to Nuclear Hot Seat listeners and followers wherever you may be in any of those 122 countries. You are big-hearted planet protectors and peaceful warriors all. And I thank you for gathering at the Nuclear Hot Seat blog site on Facebook. Theme music written by me, sung by Marilee Weber, accompaniment by John Barnard, and recorded at Winslow Court Studio in Hollywood. If you have a story lead, a hot tip, or a suggestion of someone to interview, send an email to info@nuclearhotseat.com. We are copyright 2017, Libby Halevi and Hardestry Communications. All rights reserved, but fair use allowed as long as proper attribution is provider. And a reminder that if you appreciate weekly verifiable news updates about nuclear issues around the world, delivered with as much humor as possible, take a moment to send a supporting donation to nuclearhotseat.com. This is Libby Halevi of Hardestry Communications, the heart of the art of communicating, reminding you that the last thing any anti-nuclear activist wants to be able to say is, "I told you so." Now, you've all had your nuclear wake-up call, so don't go back to sleep, because we are all in the nuclear hot seat.
Nuclear hot seat, what are those people thinking? Nuclear hot seat, what have those boys been drinking? Nuclear hot seat, the corium is sinking. Our time to act is shrinking, but our activists are linking. Nuclear hot seat, it's the bomb.
the Anti-Media Radio. Your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV.